And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And this is a very special edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, special because we're sitting across the table face-to-face with the mercenary geologist himself in his favorite watering hole in downtown Toronto. Mickey, great to see you again.
Great to see you again, Rob. Always my pleasure. It is especially nice to do an in-person interview with you, and smile at me. Show me your smiling face.
Well, you know, this is the perfect setting. We got Roxy music now playing in the background. Before that, we had Led Zeppelin. I mean, what more could a guy ask for?
I guess you could ask for Sammy Hagar, and I've heard rumors that you saw a very good Sammy Hagar concert.
Sammy Hagar, a couple of weeks ago in Toronto, was a blowout concert, a great show indeed, Mickey. You're in town visiting clients, doing the circuit, also popping by the Cambridge House Resource Investment Conference. You made a presentation to the conference today. What did you tell them?
Well, I was on a uranium panel and we discussed with some experts in the uranium sector the short, medium, and long-term fundamentals of the uranium market.
Okay, and what is your view of the market right now?
In the short term, it really sucks, Rob, you know. The uranium price is $34 a pound spot. Now, the long-term contract price is probably $55 to $60, but nobody's making much money. They certainly can't make money if they sell on the spot market. You've got to be either an ISR producer, in situ recovery producer in the United States, or even a conventional uranium producer in the United States to make money.
Okay, well, how difficult is it right now, Mickey, stepping back and taking a broader look at the junior mining resource sector right now? How difficult is it to make money in that part of the market, because it's an area of the market that's been under severe downward pressure for quite some time? TSX Venture Exchange, I believe, year to date, correct me if I'm wrong, down more than 20% off its lows, but still down substantially, double digit losses. How difficult patch are we in right now?
Well, I think it's a buying opportunity, so I actually welcome these sorts of things. The Venture Index bottomed in June. Now, we'll see if that is going to hold up. It had a very nice rally in July, flat in August. It's been off just a bit in September, but here's what I find encouraging. The smart money is going into private placements again. Money can be raised. The good projects, discoveries are being rewarded. So there is reason to think that the cream of the crop, now admittedly that might be 5 or 10% of the Venture Exchange listing, probably on the low end of that, 5%, are doing well, and they will continue to do well. It's a process where it's going to take a longer period of time to wipe out a bunch of these worthless juniors that have generally the wrong people associated with them, who then pick the wrong projects and blow out their share structures, do these financings that make no sense. I just saw a financing about a month ago, came across my desk as 40 million shares issued to raise.
How much?
At a half a cent, $200,000. $200,000 raised, and 40 million shares dilution in this company. Now, is that a rollback waiting to happen? And what are they going to do with that 200,000 shares? They're going to pay a few filing fees, pay the rent, pay the phone, and maybe pay themselves, but if they don't pay themselves, they'll take shares for debt, they'll roll the company back, and the next time they'll put it into a shell, they'll roll it back next time. that the market improves, and you'll have the same scummy management who have no ability to run a junior resource sector company. They basically live what I would call a West Vancouver lifestyle. They live off the public company dole, and that's the way the majority of this business works, and it's unseemly at the best, in my
opinion. Well, that's the difficult thing right now for the retail investor listening to us right today, Mickey. 95% of the companies out there you indicated on the venture exchange very questionable right now in terms of their survival rate. What is the number one thing that people have to look for? You know, they may be looking at a stock that a couple of years ago may be at $2. It's now down to 10 cents. How do you know if that 10 cent stock is a bargain or, you know what, just a death trap?
Well, it comes back to the same old thing: share structure, people, and projects. They've all got to be right. And they have to have cash in the bank or the ability to raise cash one way or the other without severe dilution. So there's many ways to finance junior resource companies. Generally, they are financed through equity, but there's other ways. So you want to find companies that are takeout candidates. You want to find companies that can do strategic exploration alliances with majors. You want to find companies that have advanced projects that they can do the convertible debenture, a debt instrument where shareholders can participate. There's many ways to finance companies that have merit without diluting shareholders excessively, and that's the key, because when they start diluting shareholders excessively, when they get well over 100 million shares outstanding, they become candidates for rollbacks, and no one ever benefits from a rollback.
Just prior to the recording of this interview, Mickey, you and I were commenting about how commodity prices got smacked lower on this particular trading session. Gold was down, I think, more than $40 an ounce. Copper taking a hit, silver taking a hit. Should people, how much emphasis should retail investors put on the movement in commodity prices in terms of their decision as to whether or not to buy a mining stock?
I think what you need to do is have a longer term view of the future of the commodity, supply demand fundamentals. Do I care that copper went down from 325 to 320 today? Well, yes, I do, because the copper companies I hold probably got knocked down the same amount. They got knocked down a notch today. But I have a longer-term view of the copper market, and the world demands copper. So the gold price got knocked down $42 today. Why? Probably in anticipation of what the Fed's going to do next Wednesday. But that's 6 days away. So markets, commodity markets, are the most speculative markets on the planet. So the day-to-day machinations of those prices mean very little into the longer-term view. If you want to buy physical gold, you buy on these sort of perturbations. Gold was $1,180 in late June. It's $1,320 today. Well, if you buy gold at $1,180, you're very happy. But tell you the truth, the last gold I bought, I paid $1,467 for.
And you're not sweating today?
Oh, not at all. Because I bought gold content of nuggets that probably cost me on the order of $1,250 with the gold content of the nuggets. I can turn around and sell those specimen grade nuggets for a hell of a lot more than $1,320 an ounce, probably on the order of $4,000 an ounce. So you just need to be smart about the markets. The thing about markets is you cannot get involved unless you're waiting to sell something or waiting to buy something on the day-to-day trading range of it. You need to take a longer-term view, and especially in the commodities market, you welcome weakness, because that gives you, gold and silver markets, that gives you buying opportunities.
Okay, but when you view the current market action, for example, as a buying opportunity, and you decide to get in there and buy stock in ABC company, are you basing that yourself on a 1-year time horizon, 3 years, 5 years?
Well, I generally have a 12-month horizon for speculative stocks, but longer for, you know, I have a longer-term portfolio, too. For instance, I have a very robust portion of my net speculative investments are in the uranium space. Now, I just told you that short-term looks dismal for uranium. I have a longer-term view on that. On the other hand, I'm not averse to getting in and out of stocks. So
a little bit of play money kind of. Do you have any play
money? No, it's all play money. Every bit of money I have in this market is play money. This is not core living day-to-day money. Because this is a speculative, this is a gambling.
Mickey Fulps in retirement money is not in this market.
No, absolutely not. This is not something these are speculative markets. The only advantage to doing what we do in this market versus going to Vegas and gambling is we have the ability to skew those markets in our favor by doing due diligence. And the proper due diligence, you can find out the best deals. You know, it's like going to, if you're going to the casino, are you going to go play roulette? No. Why would you play roulette? It's a total game of chance. And on average, it pays back, what, 95% of the money? The casino's making money. So your chances of playing a game of chance are less than break even. So why would you, if you're a good blackjack player, you go play blackjack. If you're a good poker player, you go play poker, because you can skew the odds in your favor. You're playing against another person. And if you're smarter and you understand the game better than the other person, you can make money at that. Roulette, you're playing a mechanical instrument that you, on average, are going to end up losing money at. And so I look at the stock market much the same way. It's gambling, but it's very easy to skew the odds in your favor. So,
in wrapping up, Mickey, half a year ago or so, there was another newsletter writer who came out with a study talking about how cash poor a lot of these TSX venture exchange companies were.
I think that would be John Kaiser.
John Kaiser, who you know quite well.
Oh, I do, and we were on a show. We occupied the last 30 minutes of the PDAC in March on BNN, talking with Andy Bell of the Commodities Show.
Now, he was outlining the fact that a lot of these companies had very, very little money left in the bank, and that we were going to see, my goodness, a mass culling of the herd, so to speak. A lot of these companies wouldn't be around in a very short period of time. Are we seeing evidence of that taking place just yet?
Well, no. In a word, no. These companies, it amazes me how long they can keep the doors open and continue to fabricate stories that people will continue to speculate in. But a significant portion of this business is running on fumes. It takes a long time for them to get delisted. And until they are delisted and are gone, the business as a whole is under a cloud that the only silver lining will be that at some point, you know, they're going to be gone. But it's a process that never goes as fast as we want it to.
All right, well, let's end it on that note, Mickey. We're going to do it all over again in a couple of weeks. Are we going to get back on track, perhaps, talking toxic metals again? We did promise listeners last time out.
Yeah, we're going to talk about selenium, and we're going to give a little anecdote about loco weed. And anybody that's watched a Western on TV in their lifetimes or a movie will know about loco weed, which was the scourge of cattle and horses and sheep in the Western U.S.
Not the kind of stuff you might be growing in your backyard. You don't want the police to see.
No, that's in Vancouver, okay? we're in Toronto today, okay.
Great stuff, Mickey. Always a pleasure meeting you face-to-face. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay, that is Mickey Fulton, mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.